Repair Show, starring Jim Babka. Maybe your mother told you never talk politics and religion in polite company. Well, Jim Babka's mother never told him that. So come on, enjoy the forbidden pleasure. You can participate in the conversation at 1-800-259-9231. Today's show is sponsored by Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org. And now, here's Jim.
Well, it is Sunday again, and it's time for another episode of the Culture Repair Show. And I'm your host, Jim Babka. And I got to say, I'm not really prepared to work today. I have been working straight through for weeks. And this weekend, I had a chance to take a break. Had a chance to do something very special yesterday. I want to send out congratulations to Andrea Leanne Toth and Sean David Steele. She's now Andrea Steele, married yesterday. Sean is one of my best friends going back to grade school days, really, since about 6th, 7th grade. We've been friends and very good friends in adulthood. And I was in the wedding party yesterday. Yes, your excellent host was in a tuxedo yesterday, and not very comfortable, by the way. The famed Men's Warehouse was where we got our tuxes, and my jacket was a bit too tight, and it's partially because I'm getting fat again. But the wedding was great. It was fantastic to see this couple come together and celebrate. They're off for 2 weeks of honeymooning in beautiful Florida. And so we wish them the best and God's best and good luck. And so congratulations, Andrea and Sean. Well, one of the topics I want to get into today, I'd like to talk about a case going on in Dover, Pennsylvania, involving a split over the question of evolution. I came on this show and shocked some people by saying that I believe, as a Christian, that the best explanation for our natural history is evolution. I've continued to study this topic since. I had a post about this back in August, early August, I believe it was, on my blog, where I explained my rationale and reasoning, how I come to this conclusion. And this was a difficult position for me to come to, because I desperately wanted intelligent design to be the correct explanation, but some things have, I became aware of some things that made that no longer plausible. And in fact, now that I have studied this more thoroughly and I have a better understanding of the subject, I actually think that intelligent design is a very bad idea. And so this case in Dover, PA has to do with whether or not evolution should be taught all by itself in the schools, or whether there should be some equal time of some sort given an alternative text, a supplemental text, I guess you would say, should be offered to students, allowing them to understand the controversy between intelligent design or the fact that there's an alternative opinion about our origins. The ACLU is defending 8 sets of parents in a case that I think eventually will wind its way all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. I want to comment about that in just a bit. And you can get in on the conversation at 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. Or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org. That's comments@downsizedc.org. And comments is plural. It's got an S on the end of it. And we use downsizedc.org because I am the host, I'm the president of the Downsize DC Foundation and downsizedc.org Incorporated. And we're going to talk about downsizedc.org Incorporated as well later in the show. We want to talk about our campaign to sacrifice the pig that will be coming up this week, probably Monday morning, dealing with pork and hurricane relief. And if I have time, I'd like to get to some things about price gouging. But before we do any of that, we also have to, by the way, do a GOA update. Gun Owners of America does graciously sponsor this show, and I'm thankful for them. But before that, we've got to do a war update. And it's at this time in the show that I remind you that war is the father of government lies. Thank you. Say it again. Well, you know, most of the lies that we have covered in this segment of the show, in these updates, we have talked about things that have already happened. We have talked about how the president, you know, tried to advance the idea of weapons of mass destruction being in Iraq. It turns out those weapons weren't there. And then we end up going to war with them anyway. Turns out that was based entirely on faulty intelligence and probably even intelligence, creative intelligence, I guess we could call it, an attempt to try to make things look a certain way. It's interesting. I wasn't planning on saying anything about this, but I got to tell you, every time I see someone in the media say, "Well, no one really knew in advance," or "The whole world believed in advance that Saddam Hussein had these weapons," and so you can't really fault the Bush administration. Or someone says, "I don't want to hear about the past. I want to talk about now." I get frustrated. Truthaboutwar.org. I participated in building that. You'll see several articles there with my name on it. We made several predictions, including that there weren't weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And that was in February of 2003. We invaded on March 19th, 2003. And the rest is history. In fact, we froze, except for the flash page, we froze that site in time, truthaboutwar.org. So it's not true that people didn't know. The information was out there if you were willing to challenge the prevailing opinion. But I want today I'm going to do something completely different. I don't want to dwell on the past. I want to talk about the future. I want to explain something to you that's happening again right now. And we have history as a guide. See, we figure this stuff out because we do our homework and we know our history. And we can remember things that happened. In this case, we only have to go back to the Johnson and Nixon era, to the Vietnam War. That's not really that long. That's within my lifetime. That's within the lifetime of many of the people listening. It's really not that long ago. But there may be people listening who don't remember what went on during the Vietnam War. The Associated Press is reporting, and this is the title of the column, "Bush Upbeat on Iraqi Troops." Subheadline, "Comments Come Despite Commander's Bleaker Assessment." You know, the president went out Saturday and said he's encouraged by the increasing size and capability of the Iraqi security forces. Now, in the last week, twice, they have downgraded their assessment of the Iraqi forces. And on Saturday, despite all evidence to the contrary, the President of the United States has come out and said that he is upbeat. He thinks it's pretty good. "All Americans can have confidence in the military commanders who are leading the effort in Iraq and in the troops under their command. They have made improvement gains in recent weeks and months. They are adapting our strategy to meet the needs on the ground, and they're helping us to bring victory in the war on terror." By the way, Bush must have forgotten. They're not supposed to say war on terror anymore. They made that decision as well. They had some new name for it that they don't ever use anymore. But at any rate, war on terror, he says they're making progress. And I want to hearken back to the Vietnam era. Because, you know, General George Casey, the top U.S. commander in Iraq, said that opposition to the Iraqi draft of the Constitution is actually increasing the likelihood of more mobilizations of terrorist attacks, suicide attacks, and other types of violence and danger that our troops will encounter there. And on top of that, there's twice this week they've downgraded their assessment of how far along they are in their progress of setting up an Iraqi military that can take care of and defend the country, allowing for our withdrawal. So we'll go back to the Vietnam War after this break. 1-800-259-9231 or comments at downsizedc.org gets you on the show. Imagine you're on trial. The charge against you, violating one of the hundreds of laws Congress passes each year. You rise in your defense and say, "Your Honor, I didn't know about this law." How will the judge respond? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I think you know the answer. The judge will reply, "Ignorance of the law is no excuse." So what's the excuse for your representatives in Congress? Their ignorance is even worse. They don't even read many of the laws they pass. At DownsizedDC.org, we're proposing a simple but powerful idea, the Read the Bills Act, to force Congress to read the laws they pass. Why? Because we believe the federal government is way too big.
We want to slow the politicians down. We want to reduce the size and power of the federal government, and we want them to sweat the details, just like you do. Check out DownsizeDC.org, because ignorance is no excuse, even for a congressman.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
It's 20 minutes past the hour here on the Culture Repair Show. I am your host, Jim Babka. 1-800-259-9231. You can maybe have comments on this trial involving whether or not intelligent design should be taught in the public schools. We're going to get to that shortly. We also will have a gun owners update coming up shortly, because they are, after all, the sponsors of this show. And if we have time, we'll get into price gouging and a new Downsize DC campaign to sacrifice the pig, dealing with pork spending in the federal government in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. And I have another little interesting bit, if we have time, I don't know that we will, to get into about CAFTA. You remember us talking about CAFTA a few months ago, the supposedly free trade agreement. It turns out there's some other reasons now to be concerned about its passage. It did pass, and DownsizeDC.org opposed it. But we were in the middle, when we went to the break, of a war update, because war is the father of government lies, and we were talking about how George Bush and the administration had lied, taking us into Iraq about, for example, weapons of mass destruction, amongst a bunch of other things, and how it was possible to know in advance. Well, one of the ways that we knew in advance when we were putting together truthaboutwar.org was we went back and we looked at history. And, you know, just in this previous hour, if you were listening on the Genesis Communications Network, you had a chance to listen to the Harry Brown Show. And the Harry Brown Show is an investment show. He talks about how to handle and manage your money. He and co-host John Chandler. And they do a wonderful job of that. And there are other people who talk about how to invest your money. I must say, I wish I had a scheme that was as reliable as how I can predict what the government can do. Okay? I mean, I don't get these things wrong. I have a set of heuristics or rules of thumb that I follow that let me know what the government's going to do next. In fact, I only need the sketchiest amount of details about a given situation, and I can predict with just amazing accuracy what's going to happen. Now I'll let you in on part of my secret. I did my homework. During the Vietnam War, the Pentagon Papers made a big to-do, because they were stolen and leaked to the media, by Daniel Ellsberg. Ellsberg was someone who started off in support of Vietnam, a very smart strategist, who changed his mind over the course of things. And what changed Ellsberg's mind, and what the Pentagon Papers clearly demonstrated, was that the official line that was being given to the public by the Johnson and Nixon administrations differed dramatically from what they were being told by their advisors, the people who were closest, the experts that they were consulting, who would go out into the field and would report back. Now, the reports that were coming back were not only not optimistic, they were downright pessimistic, and the Pentagon Papers and Daniel Ellsberg helped illustrate this. Now, we don't have any Pentagon Papers. This is right here in plain sight. We have two scalings down of predictions about how far along we were and how soon we would have Iraqi battalions up and running and able to manage themselves to protect their own country. We have an Iraqi constitution that is causing instability, and by the way, should be causing concern at home. I'm holding here a copy of someone had obtained a partial draft of it. I have not had time to read it. It's many, many pages long, and of this constitution. And there's some serious problems in this thing. I mean, it's hard to believe we committed American troops, young men and women who are there to represent America, who are there to represent democracy, if you will. I don't believe that's what they were there to represent. To represent our country, to represent our constitutional values, sent over there for this. This constitution that looks like a Muslim religious document, a fundamentalist Muslim religious document. There are things in here. Now, there are people now saying, well, we have to be acceptable, we have to, you know, learn to accept that, you know, we have to compromise and take half the loaf and so forth. But almost 2,000 people and close to, I think, roughly 10,000 casualties, you know, severe injuries, have occurred trying to get this constitution. Okay? If you happen to be an expert on this or you've read it, I'd like to hear what you think about this Constitution at 1-800-259-9231. But this Constitution isn't even satisfying the factions within the country, so much so that they're willing to die to stop its passage, to stop it dead in its tracks. This is the hornet's nest that we've created. And the president, here's the lie, he's upbeat. Now, there's only two things possible. Either A, he's not telling us the truth, the same way Nixon and Johnson didn't, and I mean their respective administrations in particular, or he's disconnected from reality. He's not reading the paper. He's not watching the news. He's not even listening to his own advisors. He is totally off in his own bubble. He's busy working hard. He's working real hard. Folks, we have no reason to be upbeat about what's going on in Iraq. None. President Bush, he's either not telling the truth or he's out of touch with reality. Also reported by the Associated Press, the Bush administration is not done there. They've got plans in this hemisphere too. They're eyeing a post-Castro Cuba and calling for freedom. And they have hired a man named Caleb McCary to be a State Department official in charge of transition matters for Cuba. Now, McCary was appointed July 28th, and he is basically a transition coordinator. Now, I can understand why an administration coming in that just got elected would need a transition coordinator, but I'm kind of curious why we would have a transition coordinator for another country. Well, the reason is we have designs. Again, President Bush said, "We believe the people of Cuba should be free from tyranny. We believe the future of Cuba is a future of freedom." Well, those are noble sentiments. Those are wonderful sentiments. I hope he's right. From the bottom of my heart, I hope he's right. But this is exactly the same mistake we're making in Iraq, that we're about to make in Iran, that we have made in other locations around the globe, that we are the dictators, that we have an empire, and that we have interests, and therefore those interests should be the interests of the world. If the people of Cuba want to break free, Castro's death provides them an opportunity to do so. If they want a democratically elected government, they can fight for it. And it is unfortunate, but liberty and freedom require the blood of patriots. Thomas Jefferson himself said the Tree of Liberty had to be watered with the blood of patriots. He said a revolution was necessary, at least a little one, you know, every 14 years or so. Why are the people of Cuba exempt? Now, the result, every time we have interfered, has been bad. And Cuba itself is an example. Castro is largely an American creation. People may not like to hear this, but we backed the previous government, and then we transferred horses when it appeared Castro was getting power in the late 50s, and backed Castro. And he turned back around and bit us. Folks, if we were openly trading with Cuba right now, by the way, I believe we'd have this problem licked. I mean, China is making vast progress, I mean, incredible progress, because their market is beginning to boom. And people are beginning to obtain information that they couldn't get their hands on before. They can have more children than they used to be able to have. They are able to do all of these things because they have a freer market. We could have done the same thing in Cuba, but the Bush administration wants to design their own transition policy and get us in yet more trouble. Stay tuned. A congressman recently revealed that legislation totaling 2,900 pages and involving more than $1 trillion was available to members of Congress for less than 48 hours to study and consider. That's over 60 pages of legislation per hour. Do you think anyone read the entire bill? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Consider a proposal buried in a 3,200-page, $388 billion bill, which would have empowered committee chairmen or their agents to examine Americans' tax returns. When this horrible provision came to light, no one claimed to know how it got into the bill. One congressman questioned said, "I didn't write it. I didn't approve it. I wasn't even consulted."
If your attorney represented you this way, he might be disbarred. But this is how Congress represents you every day. That's why DownsizeDC.org has created the Read the Bills Act. You can force Congress to read their bills before they pass them at DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Right in the middle of the Culture Repair Show. You know, you might wonder why I titled this show the Culture Repair Show. And I did it because I have this fundamental belief. I spend most a lot of my time talking about government and politics, and you might be wondering what the connection is. I actually believe that government does a great deal more to damage our culture than perhaps any other force out there. Any other school of thought, any other belief system. That the federal government, the state, the state, capital S state, you know, the way it used to be understood by people who were illiterate, that the federal government damages so many different things. It damages family, it damages community, it damages compassion, it damages, looking out for your neighbor, it damages education, it just damages so much, it damages your industry, and it even kills people. So I believe that a smaller government not only leads to human progress, but repaired culture. That liberty, that the price of liberty is responsibility. And so my encouragement to you today is that if you want to have a smaller government that leaves you to, that allows you to keep what you earn, to save, to invest, to give away as you see fit, not as the politicians determine, then you need to downsize D.C. And the side benefit of that is that people will be more responsible, that when they're left to their own devices, they choose a responsibility. They embrace responsibility because they're connected to the consequences of their actions. One organization that seems to understand this is Gun Owners of America, who happens to be a sponsor of this show. And right now it's time for a GOA update brought to you by Gun Owners of America. www.gunowners.org, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. We've been updating you for the last couple of weeks about Senate Bill 397 potentially coming up for a vote in the House. Senate Bill 397 was an attempt, at the Senate's attempt, to make sure that they ended frivolous lawsuits against gun manufacturers. Essentially, we're going to blame the manufacturers of guns for the crime that's committed in inner cities. And because this allows municipalities, grandstanding politicians and lawyers and so forth to go out and sue these gun companies and reap tremendous rewards. But the Senate bill was designed to stop it. Well, the Senate Bill 397 passed. That was the good news. The bad news was that some amendments were added to it, including a trigger lock provision requiring that the guns be sold with a trigger lock. Trigger locks, my friends, are dangerous. Sold with a trigger lock. And Gun Owners of America has taken a lone, solitary stand against this and asked for a clean bill, and the House version is H.R. 800. Now, the very top update that Gun Owners of America has at its website, which they provided on Tuesday, September 20th, called for you to get in touch with Representative Marilyn Musgrave. She's a Colorado Republican. She is the leader of the Second Amendment Caucus in the House, and she is the logical person to carry the word that H.R. 800 needs to be passed. Now, the thing that's really interesting here is that if Senate Bill 397 is the provision, is the bill that gets passed, there will be no conference committee, and gun locks will be part of this new law. That's why it's important that H.R. 800 be passed, so that there is a conference committee and a chance to strip this provision. You can take action by going to the gun owner's website, gunowners.org. Right now, it's the very top update you'll find there. And as I have chance, I will post the link to this on my blog as well. So I'm just going to make a note of that right now. Post on blog. Okay. Let's talk about price gouging. One of my favorite writers online is James Leroy Wilson. In my office, I have various things up on my wall, but I only have one op-ed editorial on my wall, and it's by James Leroy Wilson, and I was pleased that James Leroy Wilson started blogging. He has a blog called Independent Country. You can find it at independentcountry.blogspot.com. And he talks about gouging, and I think this piece is just absolutely wonderful, so I want to share it with you. When disasters strike, normal supply chains are cut. Store shelves will not be restocked for a while. The current stock of gas, food, and supplies may be the last the store will see in perhaps a long time. In other words, there are fewer things people can purchase. Everyone's a loser here, the consumer and the seller. Yes, if one store is unharmed while competitors are destroyed by the storm, it will get all the business. But if it doesn't raise prices, there will be a run on the store as consumers will stock up on everything and the shelves will soon be empty with no restocking for a while. Natural disasters result in the loss of goods and services for the consumer and the loss of business for the seller. It's an important point to understand. You know, some, actually many, say that the seller must bear all the costs when disasters strike. He must sell everything at the same price as before, as if there was no shortage of supplies. Grandstanding politicians love to come out and say things like this. But when his inventory is completely sold, he cannot sell anything at all until the supply chain is restored, and then he must pay to restock the entire store at once. When natural disasters cause shortages, everyone's economic behavior must change. It's a very important point I'm going to make here. Not just sellers, but consumers also. Sacrifice is inevitable. Luxuries must be dispensed with. Necessities, such as a bottle of water, now needs to be shared between two people when previously they each enjoyed their own. Maybe they even threw away some of it. They didn't finish it. Medicine may have to be taken at longer intervals than before. Don't blame the economy. Blame the storm. And prices are designed to help reflect this. Now, you know, Wilson quotes David Brown, who after Hurricane Charlie wrote this following example, and I think this is really good. Well, let's consider ice. Okay, we're going to consider ice. Before Charlie hit, few in Central Florida had stocked up on ice. It looked like the storm was going to skirt that part of the state, and on the day of landfall, however, it veered eastward, thwarting all the meteorological predictions. After Charlie cut his swath through Central Florida, hundreds of thousands of Central Florida residents were unexpectedly deprived of electrical power and therefore of refrigeration. Hence the huge increase in demands for ice. Now let's postulate that a small Orlando drugstore has 10 bags of ice in stock that prior to the storm, it has been selling for $4.39 a bag. Of this stock, it could normally expect to sell one or two bags a day. In the wake of Hurricane Charlie, however, 10 local residents show up at the store over the course of a day to buy ice. Most want to buy more than one bag. So what happens? If the price is kept at $4.39 a bag because the drugstore owner fears the wrath of the state attorney general and finger wagging of local news anchors, the first five people who want to buy ice might obtain the entire stock. The first person buys one bag, the second person buys four bags, the third person buys two bags, the fourth person buys two bags, and the fifth person buys one bag. The last five people get no ice. Yet one or more of the last applicants may need the ice more desperately than any of the first five. But suppose the store owner is operating in an unhampered market, realizing that more people than usual, will now demand ice, and also realizing that with supply lines temporarily severed, it will be difficult or impossible to bring in new supplies of ice for at least several days. He resorts to the expedient of raising the price to, say, $15.39 a bag. Now, is he a bad guy? Has he done something evil? Senator Bill Nelson of Florida says that the oil companies that raised the gas prices after the hurricanes were doing something bad. He wanted to stand up for the people and fight price gouging. And when we come back, we'll explain why this logic is flawed. 1-800-259-9231. Almost last chance to call. Get in on the show. If you're an internet political activist, pay close attention. The Federal Election Commission, FEC for short, is about to make your life difficult. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Last September, a federal judge ruled, quote, to permit an entire class of political communications to be unregulated would permit an evasion of campaign finance laws. That means if you forward a campaign press release using an email list, post a campaign ad on your blog,
or link to a candidate's website from your homepage, then you may well be required to register with the government and file complicated reports. You'll probably need a lawyer, too. And what the FEC won't tell you is that none of these rules will apply to MSNBC or the New York Times website. This shouldn't happen in America. You have First Amendment rights. Visit DownsizeDC.org to free the Internet. A one-sentence law can stop this unconstitutional insanity. That's DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babcock on the GCN Radio Network.
I'm sitting in a studio right now, which is basically the Babcock Family Ranch. I work here, do the radio show here, and the aforementioned Sean and Michelle, who I want to congratulate once again, they got married yesterday, and I was a participant in the wedding. We have brought their puppy home here to watch while they're away, and the puppy has begun barking. So if you hear barking in the background, that is Haley making her radio debut. And so I just want you to know, this is the hazards of doing live radio, ladies and gentlemen. Well, when we left our story about price gouging, the store owner had raised the price of his ice to $15.39 a bag. Is he an evil store owner? Well, let's read on and find out. Now customers will act more economically with respect to the available supply. Now the person who has $60 in his wallet and who had been willing to pay $17 to buy four bags of ice, maybe willing to pay for only one or two bags of ice, because he needs the balance of his ready cash for other immediate needs. Some of the persons seeking ice may decide that they have a large enough reserve of canned food in their homes that they don't need to worry about preserving the 1 pound of ground beef in their freezer. They may forego the purchase of ice altogether, even if they can afford it, in the sense that they have $20 bills in their wallets. Meanwhile, the stragglers who in the first scenario lacked any opportunity to purchase the ice will now be able to do so. Now, this principle, folks, applies to all products, and in circumstances more dire than Orlando, like what happened even in New Orleans. Higher prices help people acquire what they need most. It does so by giving them the incentive to give up what they don't need as much, but which someone else may desperately need. This principle holds true all across the lines, and in fact, Brad at McBlog writes, "My father's old car was sitting idle, waiting to be sold. He drove my stepmother's old car about 2 miles a day. She drove her new minivan about 40 miles a day, and my stepsister drove her new monster SUV about 60 miles a day. 60 miles. Then Katrina hit. My stepsister, with the longest commute, now drives my father's old car. My stepmother, the second longest drive, drives her old car. My father, the shortest commute, drives the minivan, and the SUV sits idle. I'd hazard a guess they've cut their combined gasoline consumption by 40%. Listen closely, environmentalists. Pay close attention. Price gouging, as you call it, is how the free market promotes conservation. Put that in your peace pipe and smoke it. Let's talk about this trial in Dover, Pennsylvania. I'm looking at an article from the Knight Ridder newspapers right now. Trial exposes lingering split over evolution, and there were a couple things that jumped out at me here. First, they had a quote from a lady named Judy Grimm, age 63, outside of Dover. She just stepped out of a video lecture called "Why Evolution is Stupid," and she says, quote, "If I'm taught there is a God I'm responsible to, I know I have to treat people right. But if there's no creator to answer to, it changes your whole lifestyle, then it's just survival of the fittest. That's where our society is headed. That's why we have so many of the problems we do." Well, this is an incredibly flawed analysis, and I want to say, first of all, that Ms. Grimm's idea of survival of the fittest is not the survival of the fittest that evolution teaches about. Evolution teaches the idea that those traits that are the strongest are the ones that are most likely to survive in natural selection. It's not some cruel way of it's just a fact. Okay, I don't even know. I have a hard time characterizing this because her understanding of it is just so far off. It doesn't mean that if somebody's weak, we should destroy them. It doesn't mean that the weak should not receive our compassion, our aid, our assistance. It means nothing like that. It is not a moral statement. It is a fact of nature that those traits that are weak go away. Folks, all of your ancestors were winners. All of them. You are part of the fittest. You have survived. Your race, your family, your parents. The easiest way to illustrate this question is, how many of your parents died as children? Show of hands out there. It was also interesting to me. Let me just skip ahead here. There's several things that are going on in this article that are just kind of stunning to me. But there was a quote in here by the executive director of the National Center for Science Education. Her name is Eugenie C. Scott. And this quote really set me to thinking about this whole situation. She said, "It's something we agonize about," referring to the fact that half the population believes in creationism or some variant of it. Okay, even though the scientific community overwhelmingly believes in evolution, it sees it as a scientific fact, about half the population believes in some variation of creationism. How we really are going to solve the problem, she says, rather than just keep handing out fire extinguishers. Well, I've got some suggestions for Ms. Scott. First, stop putting all of your stock in public schools. And the evidence that they're putting all their stock in the public schools is the fact that they're taking this lawsuit and they're challenging the rules on the grounds of separation of church and state. There shouldn't just be a separation of church and state. There should be a separation of school and state. There should be a separation of economics and state. There should be a separation of housing and state. You name the subject, it should be separated from the state. They should all be separate from the state. We'd all be better off. These civil wars that are started because the state has gotten involved where it doesn't belong. They have put all of their stock in public schools, and it has been done in such a way that it seems hostile to Christians. When I come back, I'm going to give the second problem that I see and some suggestions to Eugenie Scott how they can get more people to embrace the idea of evolution, particularly those who believe in God. I'm speaking as someone who does. 1-800-259-9231. Last chance to get in on the Culture Repair Show. Several days after the Patriot Act was passed, a printed version was made available for Congress to read. Yes, I said several days after the Patriot Act was passed. But that's not unusual. Congress routinely passes bills that has little or no time to read. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I say it's time for a new American revolution with the slogan, "No legislation without representation." Congress cannot claim to be representing us when they don't know what's in the bills they pass. They shouldn't take the words of lobbyists. They shouldn't rely on unelected staff. And they shouldn't take orders from the party leadership because, after all, they're supposed to represent you. At DownsizedDC.org, you'll find a bill that should be the law of the land. It's called the Read the Bills Act. You can read it at our website, DownsizedDC.org. Better yet, you can use our simple system to tell your elected representatives to sponsor the Read the Bills Act. Write it down, DownsizedDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
I'm giving advice to Eugenie C. Scott, the executive director of the National Center for Science Education, to deal with the problem that half the American public believes in some form of creationism, and you know that generally means it tends to mean a younger Earth than science experts believe we have, the absence of evolution, and she says we have to keep handing out fire extinguishers, and I already advised her to stop putting all her stock in public schools. Let me be specific about what my recommendation would be. They need to come up with a program where they target Christians and homeschoolers, and they should expect inroads to be difficult. But they're going to need to do this in a way that is respectful of those people, that actually explains how, potentially, evolution and their Christianity mesh together, how they both are possible. There are authors who have already begun doing this work, and there need to be more. And if they really wanted to do something rather than just hand out extinguishers, the National Center for Science Education would start providing grants that would lead to this kind of scholarship, where evolution wasn't a threat to Christianity. Too many scientists. Number two, my second recommendation is too many scientists are so committed to materialism, they refuse to respect faith. And so for that reason, they fail to devise an outreach plan. And they fight for schools on the grounds of separation of church and state. Now, if this is a separation of church and state issue, what are Christians supposed to conclude? It's not incumbent on the Christians, it's not incumbent on the people in the country to research and understand these questions. It's incumbent upon the people who are teaching science to do a better job of communicating, and public school is one of the worst places that they do a job of doing of anything. They ought to be promoting not only the separation of church and state, but the separation of school and state. Now, I believe that if evolution wins in this case, which I hope it does, it will help foster that. There will be another mass exodus for this. If this ends up going all the way to the Supreme Court and we end up with a separation, we will end up with more people exiting the government school system and placing their kids in homeschool or in private schooling or Christian schooling, which I think will be better for all of us in the long run. And so that's the result that I want to encourage. Last thing, DownsizeDC.org is probably going to be launching a campaign tomorrow morning, Tuesday at the latest, to deal with the fact that Congress needs to do its patriotic duty. I asked the question last week. We've decided to turn it into a campaign. It's going to be called Sacrificing the Pig. The pig is in pork. When a crisis like this hits, we're all told that we need to come together, that our compassionate spirit needs to rise before, and we need to be willing to sacrifice. The politicians call on us to sacrifice. Well, we always sacrifice. The American people constantly sacrifice, and then they give charitably on top of it. We pay taxes. We have our dollars inflated. We see the government borrow and take us deeper and deeper into debt. But something needs to change. Something fundamentally different needs to happen. The politicians need to join in the sacrifice. They need to make sacrifices. So we're going to do something novel. We're going to do something nobody else is doing. There's been a lot of talk about pork in the last couple weeks and whether or not it should figure into this equation, because we're going to have a record-setting deficit. Well, we think here's what needs to happen. People in the congressional districts need to say to their congressmen, we're willing to give up pork. Take the pork that you've used to buy votes, give it up, and help pay for the relief effort. We can't stop Katrina, folks. The funding that the government's going to do, it's going to be willy-nilly, it's going to be destructive, it's not going to work. But we can get them to give up some of their pork and goodies in their patriotic effort. This has been the Culture Repair Show, and I'm your host, Jim Babka. It's been a good time, and I hope you'll be back here next week, and that you'll check out my blog, jimbabka.com.